afternoon. Attorneys, I'm William C. Meyer, Bill Meyer, and I'll be your presiding justice today on the cases we have for submission. To my left is Justice Sue Walker, to my right is Justice Leanne Dolfino, and this will be your panel for this afternoon. And if the clerk will please call the cases.
The court will now call an episode of Xavier Child, Mr. Matthew Campbell will argue for the appellant, and Mr. Raymond Daniel will argue for the appellant.
Welcome, counsel.
Thank you. May it please the court, my name is Matthew Campbell, and I'm here today to represent the appellant Natasha Vasquez. The sole issues presented today revolve around the parental presumption found in the Texas Family Code. However, it's important for this court to understand and recognize what is embodied in that section. And specifically, because this is a case between the parent of a child and between the non-parent, the fundamental constitutional right of my client to be a parent to her child is invoked. That right is embodied in the Texas parental presumption, which holds that there can be any number of reasons why placement of a child could be in the best interest with a non-parent. However, what's required is proof of a significant likelihood of emotional or of impairment of emotional or physical development. In this case, the evidence that was presented and that was heard by the trial court was simply not sufficient to support the findings that were made by the trial court, which led the trial court to conclude that XV's emotional and physical development would be impaired. The types of findings that are required the types of evidence that are required have been set forth not only by this court, but by the Texas Supreme Court as well. One type of evidence that could lead a court to think that a child's emotional or physical development would be impaired with serious drug use.
What does the record reflect about the reason she voluntarily relinquished custody of the child to her aunt?
The undisputed evidence was that she had been in a relationship prior to that time where she was financially dependent upon her significant other.
What was an abusive relationship?
It was an abusive relationship, Your Honor.
And the child was abused in the sense of there was another child that was favored over that child substantially, as I understand it.
Absolutely, Your Honor, and I think that was uncontradicted.
So what, she chose the man over her child and gave up custody of her child to the aunt?
She ended the relationship prior to the time that she transferred custody of the child.
So why did she transfer?
She was left financially destitute. Her intention was
excuse
to
join.
Excuse me?
Ma'am, you're going to have to stop commenting or leave the courtroom.
She was, the evidence was that she was financially destitute. She attempted to go live with a platonic friend to have somewhere to live. That gentleman as well, it was uncontradicted, attempted to take advantage of her. So she was left at the time really without a choice. She wanted to join the Army, but she didn't have the financial resources. And so she made the right decision at that time to voluntarily transfer custody. However, within 1 year, she returned and demanded custody back.
Why was there a temporary restraining order against her?
Your Honor, that was granted with the complaint. I would have to just let the reasons that are reflected in the order stand on their own.
I'm asking you. What does the order reflect? The reasons were?
I believe that the order reflected that in the temporary hearing that there was the aunt was going to continue to have custody at that time. There was also a later.
That's not usually grounds for a restraining order.
They might be, Your Honor, and I apologize that I have not briefed that issue. It's not an excuse, but I wasn't involved in the early stages of the case.
So you don't know what actions were alleged that caused the restraining order to be imposed? Did she threaten to take the child away? Did she attempt to take the child away? Did she show up?
Well, she had the uncontradicted testimony was that she had demanded return of XV before the suit was filed, and that the suit was filed as a result of her demand for return of custody. And by her, I mean the appellant's.
Right, right.
Demand for return of custody, and that the suit was filed because of. The temporary restraining order, I believe, just fell off because there was not an appearance made by Natasha until well after that temporary restraining order had been granted, and it wasn't a part of the case once Natasha made an appearance.
Okay.
And I think that's also important to realize that it was a good decision, and we're not arguing that it was not a good decision at that time. We're just arguing that she has a right to have her child back. It's important to keep in mind that the social worker testified that at the time of the voluntary relinquishment, there was no impairment of emotional or physical development. And it was also, I think, uncontradicted that her circumstances were much better at the time of the trial. At the time of the trial, it was uncontradicted that she had a house, a place to live, there was an appropriate bedroom, there was an appropriate dresser, there was an appropriate place for that child to live with its mother. It was uncontradicted that there was a school down the road and would be able to go to that school. The social worker seemed to have a lot of concerns about that being a remote part of Texas. However, as your honors are well aware, much of Texas is remote, and it would be very unfair to punish people who live in the remote parts of Texas versus people who live in the city. I'd like to go back to the court's finding, to some of the court's findings. It was uncontradicted that the only evidence of drug use was a positive marijuana test from the fall of 2006. After that time, there was no evidence presented whatsoever of any drug use. There was also a surprise drug test given at the time of the trial to my client, which came back negative.
Counsel?
Yes.
I understand that there are many favorable, there's much favorable evidence to your client in the record, and that, you know, she may have done many things very well, but I think the issue before us is really whether the trial court's finding that she didn't get the parental presumption, and whether that finding and the negative evidence in the record supports the trial court's decision.
The trial court didn't specifically reference the parental presumption. However, the appellee in this case has...
Mr. Campbell, I'm not certain what's going on with these lights. We had some people working in the back room when we came in. If that's distracting you, we'll try to determine if we need to take a recess and let this go, or if it's all right with you to keep going. Well, then I don't know if that's going to be the end of this blinking or if it's not, and I don't think it has any significance to anything you're saying.
It's okay with me if it's okay with your honors.
Thank you, sir.
It's not a gong.
The appellee in this case admits in the brief that the one-year time period of voluntary relinquishment wasn't met, and that thus the parental presumption by the very terms of the statute applies.
But I think Judge Wells made a conclusion of law that it didn't apply.
Well, Judge Wells made a conclusion that XV's emotional or physical, there was a significant likelihood of XV suffering significant emotional or physical impairment. It's our argument that the facts as they were presented do not support that finding, and that specifically it supports a different finding. It's also that's basically what our contention is, Your Honor, is that there's not sufficient facts to find that finding. And I think there's a little bit of confusion on the appellee's part of exactly what we're saying. Well, let me give you an example. In the social worker's report, the social worker can rely on certain hearsay statements. I think that's been well decided. However, certain of those hearsay statements were taken out of context and then put directly into the judge's finding. It's our argument that that's not the type of evidence that both this court and the Texas Supreme Court have set forth as the type of evidence which would be required to support a finding of significant likelihood of future impairment or physical development. Specifically, there was a vague incident referred to in the social worker's report about a time when XV was swimming, and that he remembered himself almost drowning. However, there was no facts about the circumstances. There was no facts in the report about what led to it, and there was no real facts in the report about how my client had responded or not responded. However, the trial court pulled out that piece, that hearsay statement, and then applied great weight to it to find that there would be a likelihood of that type of event happening before. Both the Texas Supreme Court and this court have said it takes more than just a variety of isolated incidents in the past to translate into a likelihood of future emotional or physical impairment. It also was in the evidence that there was a strong bond between XV and his mother, that bond continued all the way through the time of the trial, that in all the supervised visits were full of warmth and hugging and other appropriate mother-child types of relationships. And again, the social worker testified that he didn't believe that there was a emotional or physical development in XV, either at the time custody was transferred to the aunt or later. It's again uncontradicted that she was in a much better position. There, she had the ability and the resources in order to care for XV.
But as I understand it, and what weight should the judge have given, is she didn't make all her scheduled visits with the child, and she hasn't made any attempt to support the child while the child was with the aunt. She made what, one payment?
Yes, I believe that's correct, Your Honor. She had only made one payment. The evidence was uncontradicted that my client has been having a hard time financially. She was employed at the time of the trial, and she had been employed in the months coming up, but in different jobs. She testified that because of her skills and because of her circumstances, that she'd been having a difficult time finding long-term employment. However, both, again, this court and the Texas Supreme Court have recognized that in cases where the mother's completely unemployed, that doesn't form a reason to deny the mother her right to raise her own child. There was also uncontradicted testimony that she had strong support of family members, as well as the ability to receive public assistance in order to take care of XB. It was also testified to that there was a lot of expenses in the underlying litigation, and she did her best to meet the expenses that she could do.
And who was the family member she was arrested for assaulting?
That was not the father of this child and not a spouse. It was Mr. Arjillo, who I guess the correct word would be boyfriend or paramour, I'm not sure. Mm-hmm. But it was who she was living with and who was abusive to her. Mr. Arjillo was the father of another child who was not the subject of this suit. It was uncontradicted that he would favor the other child over XV and was also just emotionally and physically abusive, mostly towards my client, but that created an unhealthy situation she had to get away from. Okay. The trial court's finding was against the weight of the evidence in this case. As both this court and the Texas Supreme Court have recognized, the level of evidence in a case such as this between a parent and a non-parent is a very, very high level. It's our argument that the appellee has not met that level and the trial court was in error. If you have no further questions, I'd like to reserve the rest of my time.
Thank you, Mr. Campbell. Mr. Daniel.
May it please the court. Your Honors, my name is Raymond Daniel, and I represent the appellee, Joanne Foley, in this case. What I'd like to do to begin with, subject to your approval, is to go through the standard of review, which I did not touch upon very much in my brief, and then show how the cases, I believe, were miscited by the appellant to support his position and how those actually help my position here today. The standard of review in this family law case is abuse of discretion, which of course means, did the judge act arbitrarily? Did she just act without any reason? I would contend to you that she did not. The judge in this case, after hearing all the evidence, made the conclusion, as I believe Justice Walker stated, that there was enough evidence to show that placing the child with the mother would impair the physical health or emotional development of the child. And that's what we have to look at to see if the judge acted properly in placing the child with a non-parent versus a parent. Cases, especially the Ray case, which I've cited in my brief, says the time you have to look at is now. But I would contend to you that when you look at now being end of April, beginning of March of 2009, you actually have to look back to December of 2006. The reason for that being, as was testified to by the licensed master social worker and cited in my brief, is that one of the reasons, or the reason, that CPS did not take the child was because the mother had placed the child with someone else, my client, the aunt, and signed over what he refers to, or the statement referred to, as guardianship papers. In other words, the child was safe at that time back in December of 2006 when the child was actually first placed with my client. So I think the logical conclusion for that is that if the child was safe being placed at that time, the child would remain safe as long as the child continued to live with Ms. Foley, my client. The agreement was that it was for 2 years and that the child would be with my client during that time. What happened in this case is 2 weeks before the two-year period was to run, Ms. Vasquez came or told my client, I want my child back. She did
not. 2 years or 1 year?
I'm sorry, you're right, Your Honor. Two weeks before the 1 year was to run, she said, I want my child back. That alarmed Ms. Foley, and that's actually why we had a temporary restraining order put into place.
What were the allegations in the restraining order?
That the child had been safe with my client during that time. And I don't remember all of those, Your Honor.
Okay, but there wasn't any attempt to steal the child or any assault on anybody?
No. In fact, Your Honor, the restraining order, we had difficulty serving Ms. Vasquez in this case. So the temporary restraining order expired. I think we did get it renewed once, which is all you can get it renewed without filing something again. And so we let things set because nothing was happening. She wasn't attempting, I believe, was not attempting to come to town to pick up the child. Had she done something like that, we would have attempted that again. Your Honor, as I was saying, if you look at December of 2006, things are okay then. The logical conclusion being that if the child were to be removed, that the child would not be safe. So I think that evidence alone is enough for Judge Wells to have found that the child would be in emotional or physical impairment if the child were removed from the current environment. I'd like to call your attention just to a couple of cases that I cited. The first one being the Llewellyn case. That's a case that the appellant cites as to support his position that unemployment and crowded living conditions are not enough to remove a child from a parent. And that's true. Those are not. That's what the Texas Supreme Court said in that case. However, if you look more closely at that case to see the footnote, it says several of things will meet that condition, including placing a child in an unstable environment. And I think it's a very logical conclusion on the judge's part to decide that the child was in an unstable environment. Having been placed with the aunt 1 year, 50 weeks later, for the mother to all of a sudden just say, I want him back now, without showing any proof of having done anything to improve herself. I think that could be concluded by the judge that the child was in an unsafe environment.
And what did the record reflect as far as her living conditions at the time she requested the return of the child?
I can't remember, Judge, but I don't know that we addressed that at the time. She I think by her own admission, she was not living on her own. She was not self-sufficient at that time, self-sustaining.
Okay.
I don't remember where she was living.
She was living with somebody.
I believe that is correct. She has lived with different people throughout, and the last place that she lived in the trailer house out in, well, out in Texas, was I think one of the few times that I can remember that she lived by herself.
Okay. Did the record reflect at the time that she was employed and how long she'd been employed?
The record did reflect that she was employed at that time. I believe she was doing some housekeeping, but not just as we think of it. It was for a service, I believe.
Okay.
But she had not been doing that very long at that time. Okay. She had testified that she had never held a job for what I'm consider a lengthy time. I don't think, definitely not more than a year, and maybe much shorter than that.
She passed the drug test, but she did have a history of drug use.
I believe she did have a history of drug use. I think I've cited a couple of things in my brief that once she did pass a drug test, yes, Your Honor. Okay. That was done that day. That was done that day. She had tested positive before, and that was one of the reasons she had been in jail before, which is another reason that might show her instability, is that she had been in jail before.
Okay. The order provides for visitation and access.
The temporary order?
Yeah, I guess it's the temporary
order. Or the final order.
The one that requires parenting classes?
I think that's the final order, I believe.
What was the basis for the judge's ordering parenting classes?
I think because she had not been around her child that much. The child would have been, I guess, 8 years old at the time of our trial, just about a year ago. I think you correctly stated she had not hardly seen the child during the time that she had the supervised visitation in place. So from August 22nd of 2008, which is when we went to court on the temporary orders hearing, until I think it was April 30th or so, 29th and May 1st, when we went back for the final trial, she had not seen the child very much. In fact, I think the record reflects, I know it does, that my client actually took the child down to near Amarillo's where the mom had been living some so she could see the child. And that the mom had seen the child, I think, just once in the times, at least since January through early end of April when we were there. There's another case cited by the appellant that I don't think supports the position it intends to. It's the Ray case, and it says that an unstable, disorganized, chaotic lifestyle or life is a reason that would cause emotional or physical impairment. In that case, it can clearly be distinguished from the case we have here. In that case, a mother had agreed to turn over her child for a certain period of time because she was going into SAFEP, the substance abuse felony probation or punishment facility. When she completed her work a year later, she was 2 weeks in a halfway house. It was only at that time that she called to get her child and see if her child could be returned. She had done programs at that time. Also, the letter had an intent to return, which I believe this one does. But it's distinguished from our case here in that during that 50 weeks that Ms. Vasquez was gone, leaving her child with my client, we don't know. She never testified to anything that she did, I don't believe, of any kind of drug classes, any kind of parenting classes, about getting stable employment. Any of the things that might not lead to an unstable, disorganized, and chaotic lifestyle. So I think you have to look at that evidence and determine that there was sufficient evidence to support this. And we're not looking at the one-year standard as was mentioned, but I believe there is sufficient evidence to support this and against any kind of legally insufficient or factually insufficient conclusion, including the social worker's statement in response to a direct question where he says, yes, I do, to the question of do you believe putting the child back or removing the child from his current environment would place the child in some kind of harm that would hurt him emotionally or physically. And that is a social worker, an expert who was agreed to and whose social study was not objected to, but was agreed to be omitted. And, Your Honor, if you have no other questions, I see my argument light is on, and so I'm going to...
Mr. Daniel, I have a question. And in your brief, you addressed the reason for the child being placed with the aunt previously was because the CPS was not satisfied that the child was safe.
Yes.
What evidence was there that contributed to the ruling that Judge Wells had made in this case that the child would not be safe if he were presently placed with the child's mother?
Well, I think it would be the fact that CPS was going to, or that CPS was only satisfied that the child was safe if the mother relinquished the child and placed the child with someone else.
Well, I understand that's a negative, and that's okay. What they thought was on the negative side of it. I'm asking for any evidence that was any presented that, in fact, the living conditions as far as the mother's environment was not a safe place for the child to live.
The actual living environment, the trailer where she was living,
yes,
that may have been a safe environment physically. I think the emotional environment is something that the judge relied on, that moving this child around and putting this child back into a chaotic, unorganized, unstable lifestyle was the problem. But Judge, I'm trying to answer your direct question about the evidence of why the child had been placed at that time.
No, I understand. I understand about the reason for the 2-year agreement and those kind of things. Mm-hmm. We're looking at the record, but I also didn't see anything in the record that showed that at the time that the mother mm-hmm. was seeking to regain her child, that there was any evidence that her current living conditions were unsafe for the child.
You're talking about in 2007 when the child had been with my client for 50 weeks then, right?
I'm talking about the last
okay.
Hearing,
well,
the
I
last
think,
hearing date, not the first.
Right. Okay, 2008 then.
Yes, 2008.
Okay. Well, I think it would be that the child would have been removed by CPS but for my client coming in and saying, I will take this child, and Ms. Vasquez not doing anything to show that she had improved herself. For example, she had a problem with drugs. She had gone to jail for drugs. Again, a chaotic lifestyle that would have placed the child somewhere other than with his mother for several days. So she had never shown anything that she had done a drug program. There was evidence that the child nearly drowned. There was no evidence that she ever learned how to do anything different than that. So those are some of the things. And I think, Your Honor, in my brief, I cited some of those things. I think on page 13, Your Honor.
Yes, sir, I read that.
Okay.
Thank you very much for answering
okay.
the question.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Okay, so there was a referral to CPS.
Yes.
All right. And CPS issued a reason to believe finding for a reason to believe the child was in need of supervision by CPS. And there was, instead of CPS taking the child, the mother agreed to a voluntary placement to prevent CPS taking the child and placing the child in foster home.
That is correct, Your Honor.
Okay. And so then pursuant to the voluntary placement to prevent the child from being placed in a foster home, the child was placed with the aunt and stayed with the aunt for 50 days. And during that time, CPS was supposed to have come up with a plan for the mother to do certain things. Was there any evidence about what the plan was or whether she did the things required by the plan?
Your Honor, if I may, it was 50 weeks. I think you may have said 50 days.
Oh, I'm sorry, 50 weeks.
Yes, there was. If I could refer you to page 10, I believe, mm-hmm. of the part that I've cited from the report.
Mm-hmm.
It says both children are safe, talking about the other child as well,
mm-hmm.
and Natasha, the mother, is not cooperating with services. Case was staffed and blah, blah, and it says agreed that the case closing due to the child being protected and mom not cooperating.
Okay.
So the case was closed because mom was not cooperating and the child was being protected. I think the logical conclusion, though, is that if the child had not been protected, that they could have come back in.
So they came up with a plan, the parenting classes, the treatment for the drug addiction, any drug addiction or counseling that she might need, or anything to prevent her going into repeated abusive relationships, whatever it was CPS came up with and told her that she was supposed to complete in order to get the children returned to her. She didn't do it.
Whatever it was, she didn't do it, yes.
All right. And so CPS essentially washed their hands of her because she just wasn't doing anything she was supposed to.
That's yes.
And they didn't need to place the children in foster care because the children were safe with their aunt.
Right. That's correct.
And so after CPS is out of the picture then because she didn't do anything, then she comes back and tries to get the children. Is that what you're saying?
That is correct, Your Honor.
Okay.
Thank you.
Mr. Daniel. Campbell, do you have rebuttal?
I do, Your Honor.
Your Honors, first I would like to point out that there was actually no testimony from any CPS officials or from the social worker having spoke to CPS officials. So the only evidence was what was cited to in the social worker's report, which is what he had read.
Was that admitted without objection?
The social worker's report was admitted without objection, Your Honor.
All right.
It's important to also note that the social worker's written report did not contain any type of conclusion that XV's physical or emotional development would likely be impaired if he was placed back with his mom. The facts and circumstances of the transfer are very important here. What's uncontradicted is that my client was left without any financial means to basically live anywhere with XV. Because she couldn't
get a job.
She needed to get a job. She absolutely she didn't have one at the time.
CPS comes up with a plan for counseling and assistance.
There was nowhere to live. She turned over custody of XV. It was uncontradicted because she didn't have a place to live at that time to have him. And that's why she turned over. That's why she turned him over. There was no evidence presented that she was attempting to evade the CPS report. I understand that that's the inference that they would like this court to draw, but that was not presented.
Well, did she participate in their program or not?
I don't know. There wasn't evidence presented one way or the other, but certainly the report reflects that what happened was that she decided to transfer custody to her aunt who lived a long way away in Fort Worth. They agreed that that was a good decision for her to do that at this point. The CPS record's very vague, except that there was 8 or 9 complaints filed, and there was only reason to support one of those. And I believe that those issues have squarely been addressed. Mm-hmm. It was clear at the time of trial that there was not drug use. There was a surprise drug test that was given to my client to take directly the day of the trial when she went downstairs and passed. There's also significant evidence that her life was no longer chaotic or unstable. She lived in a trailer home that was appropriate, that had a bedroom, that had a bathroom. The social worker went out and visited it. One of the expenses that she had to pay was to pay for the social worker to go out and visit her living conditions.
Didn't the social worker say the child would not, that in the social worker's opinion, the child should not be returned to her?
The social worker testified that he thought it would be in XV's best interest. But again, Your Honor, as this court and the Texas Supreme Court have recognized, there can be any number of reasons why custody could be in the best interest of the non-parent. However, if there is not specific evidence of a significant likelihood of future impairment, none of those reasons are specific is exactly the words the Texas Supreme Court.
Does the record reflect whether she lived in the trailer house alone or with someone else?
The record reflects that she lived alone and that her relationship with Mr. Arjillo, which was the basis of the problems, was completely over, except for the fact that they do share a child together and occasionally they would see each other. In fact, the aunt testified that at the last phone call, Mr. Arjillo was again abusive on the telephone call that she herself witnessed. But other than just that minimal contact that's required when you have a child together with somebody, they had no relationship whatsoever anymore, that had ended quite some time ago. Finally, Your Honor, I think it's also important that there was not a history of incarceration for drug use. There was one incident of incarceration that happened for an assault on somebody who wasn't part of this case and wasn't spouse or a family member. It was Mr. Arjillo. It was in the few months that had led up to the events of her allowing XV to come to Fort Worth. But certainly that incarceration wasn't for drug use. I think that was a misstatement. If there's no further questions, I believe I've said my piece.
Thank you for your presentation, Mr. Campbell, and your case is submitted, and we thank you both for your appearance today.
Thank you, Your Honors.